Hi, my name is Tom.
Hi, Tom.
And I do live in Oakland, and I've lived there since 1981. And I have relatives over in the peninsula, but I can never find them. Burlingame, San Mateo. It gets very confusing when you're as sensitive as I am. So I'm real glad to be here, and I'm glad for the invitation, and I want to welcome newcomers and visitors and voyeurs and people who, you know, couldn't find anything else to do tonight. You're sure welcome to be here. And this is an Al-Anon meeting, and I'm going to talk Al-Anon, but I'm not talking for Al-Anon. I want to make that real clear. One of the strengths of the Al-Anon program is there's lots of voices in Al-Anon. People are encouraged to give their own experience, and you find a lot of us give a lot of experience. When we get unhappy and miserable, we push and shove and give advice. But that doesn't happen most days. Most days, we give experience. And so that's what I want to do this evening. And if you find anything I say useful, please use it. And if it's not useful, don't worry about it. I assure you I am not everyone's cup of tea. And I was at a conference years ago in Southern California. And I really bothered someone very much. And so much so that at the end of the session, she came up to me and she was livid, incandescent, upset. And she said with a tight neck and clenched teeth, "You are so arrogant." Well, this is not a secret. I mean, yes, white male college graduate Catholic priest. I thought about that. You know, it wasn't really an interaction. But I thought about it over the years, and some people upset me like that too. Especially when I look at them and see me. And I think it just was a little too close to the bone. So anyway, I'm sure I'm better. But I'm flawed, and I have problems, and I have issues, and I need to get the Al-Anon on a regular basis. And but I'm going to share my point of view, and if anything's helpful, go to meetings. We encourage people to go to at least 6 meetings, but we don't mean that. We think you should go to 600 or 700 meetings before you make up your mind, because this is not an easily captured program. In some programs, they think they've gotten well the day they stop peeing on themselves. But you could be going to Al-Anon for quite some time before you know how crazy you are. It's very subtle. My sponsor, I'm an adult child of an alcoholic. That's how I get into the rooms. My sponsor is also, his father died on a slip when my sponsor was about 7 years old. My sponsor thinks that this is the program where we learn how to be people and adults. And I think he's right. I was talking to someone who was sober in the one of the other programs, and this person said that she hadn't had a drink in 7 years and hated everybody and couldn't stand her family, and did I think she was ready for Al-Anon? And I said, and I mean this, hold out as long as you can. Because if you're given the gift of misery, you'll like us right away. But if you aren't miserable enough, you're going to notice that there's people who knit and people who are fat and people who are old and people who look like this and people who look like that. And it'll get in the way. But if you are desperate enough, this is home. This is home. And it takes a while to get here. I had to get sober before I ever found Al-Anon. And I was sober several years before I started coming to the Al-Anon Fellowship. And what pushed me into Al-Anon was I was a high school teacher in Los Angeles, and the kids were driving me crazy. And I was very angry and very tired. And I have a suspicion that a lot of us, as we come into Al-Anon, are pretty angry and pretty tired. And that's a qualification, if you're just exhausted. Because you've been running the world for a long time. It is exhausting to be that vigilant. My mentor in Al-Anon was a woman named Blanche. And Blanche is from the state of Texas. And I was miserable and cranky and irritable. And I went to an Al-Anon meeting and didn't like it. And then I went to another one and didn't like it. And a friend of mine from Lake Tahoe said, I have a cassette tape of this remarkable woman from Texas. And I listened to Blanche. And hers was one of the first Al-Anon voices I could hear. And she was married to an alcoholic, and her father was an alcoholic, and she was an English teacher, and she presented her ideas very, very well. And I think I listened to that tape 100 times, and then a few years later I was asked to come to Texas and speak at a conference. And I think I was the Sunday morning speaker. And she was the Al-Anon speaker. I had no idea what she looked like. But they Saturday night, they had all the speakers sit together so we wouldn't infect the others, you know. Quarantine the speakers. We're not sure of them yet. And I just said, hello, my name is Tom, to all these people. And there was this lady from Texas, and she said, hi, my name is Blanche. And I almost burst into tears and licked her face. Which is not good, you know. They get anxious when you start licking faces. But I said, you saved my life. You saved my life. And we became friends, which was very, very nice. But she said this, and I want to these were a couple of things that helped me untie some of the knots in my head. Because I think a lot. And I tie knots in my head. And I don't know how to get them untied. She said, she learned things as a little girl that just weren't true. And one of the things she learned as a little girl was, God helps those who help themselves. And she said, that's not true, you know. God helps those who ask. I have to remember to ask. I don't remember to ask. I know I'm supposed to remember to ask, but I don't remember to ask. I had a tire blow out on me on Highway 5 a couple of weeks ago, about 70 miles north of L.A., Highway 5, huge trucks, Friday night, 5 p.m. And I pulled off the road and called AAA, and it took them 2 hours to find me, and I was getting more and more pathetic. And after about 2 hours, I remembered to ask God for help. Oh, by the way. I think AAA is a pretty good higher power, but there are even higher powers than AAA. I'm willing to say that at a meeting. So she also said this. She heard this as a little girl. What you don't know can't hurt you. And she said, listen, what I didn't know about alcoholism almost killed 4 people. So there's a lot to learn. I had to learn it was an allergy of the body and an obsession of the mind. I like that definition. It's been around for a long, long time. It matches my experience and obsession I get, allergy I get. And one of the slogans up here that we say in Al-Anon is, I didn't cause it, I can't control it, I can't cure it. The cause, control, and cure is real important. And I remember writing that down. Allergy of the body, obsession of the mind. I was told that alcoholics and addicts are obsessed with their disease, and we're obsessed with them. And I have that experience. I grew up down in San Jose, and my father's parents lived in Menlo Park. And my father's father was one of the Irish gardeners at Stanford for 40 years, when the Irish were gardeners, you know, 1900 or so. We had alcoholism on his side of the family, and we had alcoholism on my mom's side of the family, and they were all Swedes, right from the old country, Scandinavians and Irish. Lots of alcoholism in the DNA. Doesn't matter why. It's just there. But we talked around it. We used circumlocution. We used euphemism. We used denial. But you never talked about it straight on. And that was one of the things that so surprised me at meetings, is that here, not right away, but within a while, you can talk directly and simply about real things. One of my defenses that I had well into my 30s was if we were having a conversation and it got uncomfortable, I just switched the subject. Or I would do something to change the focus of attention. And I didn't even know that was my behavior for a long, long time. Let's stay on the subject. I had a therapist once, and he was invaluable to me. And one of the things he pointed out as we had a conversation, when he asked certain things that were uncomfortable, I would hold my breath and then change the subject. And I said, really? And he said, yes. He says, I'll point it out the next time you do it, which he proceeded to do. He would just say, your breathing's changed. I was so unaware of it, so unaware of it. On the Swedish Lutheran Republican side of the family, we didn't call them alcoholics, we called them nervous people. And they'd say things like, so-and-so is very nervous. And the DTs were referred to as nervous spells. On the Irish Catholic Democratic side of the family, we didn't talk about alcoholics, we talked about characters. And some people were characters. And I did not know that in lots of crazy family systems, a code gets used, and you're supposed to decode. But I didn't know that. I mean, I what you see is what you get. I'm not subtle. And I remember we also, alcoholism was covered up. So was cancer. In my family, rather than saying, she's dying of cancer, we say, she's not feeling well. And one of my cousins who was alcoholic died of cancer. And I got an angry phone call from why didn't you go see her? I thought she wasn't feeling well. So learning how to talk directly about stuff is pretty important. And I have found that it is a virtue to speak clearly and simply. My sponsor, I've heard him over and over and over again talk about complicated things with great simplicity. And I find that real useful. Alcoholism. I also heard this. It's just such a good description if you're new to this. I'm not sure if they're alcoholic. I mean, maybe. I'm not sure. The fact is, since Eisenhower was president, alcoholism is easily diagnosed by a competent physician. The key word there is competent. If you drink with your doctor, he's probably not going to know. So this image just struck me a few years ago. I heard it at a meeting, and I'll pass it on to you. But alcoholism is a lot like dancing with a gorilla. You're not done dancing until the gorilla is done dancing. Which brings up the whole thing of lack of power, lack of control. Well, you'll hear, I know I might have a problem, and if it gets really bad, I'm going to stop. Thinking you can. But the fact is, once the gorilla gets his arms around you, the gorilla's calling the shots, even if you're a college graduate. Even if you're taller than the gorilla. It's much stronger than you, and the gorilla kills a lot of people. If you are active in recovery for years and years and years, you'll go to lots of funerals. Overdoses, suicides, tragedies. I have a friend in Las Vegas who says he doesn't want to dance with the gorilla again, but he'd like to pet it a little bit. Well, if you're clean and sober today, it means the gorilla has let go. If the gorilla has let go, get out of the cage. And don't go back into the cage even when the gorilla starts humming your song, which it does. Oh, no, I promised. I'll never do that again. It was disgusting. Police, goats, never do it again. And then 6 months later, it's a full moon and you're thirsty. And I think I'll just pet it. Just one more run. Okay, one more run. Now, we who love addicts and alcoholics, we think they're fun, we think they're cute, we ought to adopt them. We who love addicts and alcoholics, we visit the zoo a lot. And we look at lions and tigers and bears. And then we walk by the gorilla cage and we see the person we love dancing with the gorilla. Could be our mom or dad. It's crazy making when it's your mom or dad. Could be your spouse. Crazy making when it's your spouse. Could be one of your kids. Could be one of your grandkids. Those are all different conversations. I sponsor a couple of people with kids, and whenever there's kid stuff as part of the stuff, I say, talk to a mom or dad. You know, I mean, I've taught them and I've seen them in stores, but that doesn't mean I understand what's going on. And I've never married an alcoholic, you know. I mean, why would you? But so you want to find someone who did. Well, we walk by the gorilla cage and we see the person we love dancing with the gorilla, and we want to take action. Do something. So we get into the cage and we start sweeping and vacuuming, moving things around, hanging curtains, making nice, nourishing meals. None of that matters. So then we try to get between the gorilla and the person we love, and the gorilla can turn on us and yank our arms and legs off. The casualty rates among people who love alcoholics and addicts is very, very high. Thus, we have a program too, and it's called Al-Anon. And a lot of the Al-Anon program, 74% of the Al-Anon program, comes down to this. Stay out of the cage. But I only want to vacuum. We know. And it upsets everybody when you do that. We're meeting over by the giraffes. And over by the giraffes, you can talk about your vacuuming needs. It's very important. Oh. So I went to Al-Anon for a while. But my first Al-Anon was Southern California, my first couple of meetings. And again, I didn't get it. I mean, what are they talking about? We read a lot. What are they talking about? No gossip or criticism, but what do you talk about? The first Al-Anon meeting I went to was in downtown Los Angeles, and the woman who was the secretary of the meeting had been secretary of that meeting for 300 or 400 years. And they read all the stuff, you know, will someone read, and it just goes on forever. It makes me crazy. See, I could just show up 20 minutes late and miss nothing. That's how I think. We read all the stuff, and then people with problems and questions would raise their hands and announce their problem or question, and then she would solve the problem. Now, in her defense, she was smart. She was a combination of Martha Stewart and Heloise. She was a smart lady who'd been around the block and had a lot of common sense, but that's not Al-Anon. That's North Korea. We don't have one person dominating a group. We rotate leadership and we share experience, and who knows anything? I know what works for me. And I try to do that with people I sponsor. I know what works for me. I know what doesn't work for me. And I don't know what anyone else should do, really. Although, on one occasion, I told a sponsee, there were 4 teenage boys in the house. I suggested strongly that she get the guns out of the house. That, I'm sure that's controversial, and committees would discuss that later. But anyway, so I then moved up here to the East Bay and got involved with social work in West Oakland and got a lot more involved in Al-Anon, and I really did come in as someone desperate for help. And it was stuff around Mom and Dad. I don't know about you, but Mom and Dad is big stuff. And I was the youngest, and there was alcoholism in the family, and I learned lots of things to survive, but I didn't know very much about living, and I sure didn't know a lot about being a grown-up. And one of my I'm a very sensitive person. What would happen is I would react to stuff. React. And one of my first Al-Anon meetings, I heard someone say, act, don't react. Act, don't react. Act, don't. I wrote that down, act, which means take a breath. Count to 10. Can I get back to you tomorrow? I learned some really important things. One of my mentors told me, when you're just flummoxed, confused, in a dither, you can say something like, let me get back to you. You can say that. Really? Or you can say, I'll be right back. You can do that too. I wrote these down. I have them there. I help out in the elections. I participate in, you know, the American process. And, I've helped run a precinct for years and years and years. And the few elections back, we were doing I was in charge of a precinct in a senior citizen center. A lot of voters needed some help. Happy to help. Let me be of assistance, please. And, but, you know, it starts at 7 in the morning and going on through the day, and I learned I need orange juice and breaks or I get a little snippy. But I didn't take a break for 10 different perfectly good reasons. And it was about 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and a lady came to vote, and she had been having a bad day for the last, I'd say, 20 years. And she was full of complaint. And you know, like, we keep changing the election law, punch cards, the ballots, to this, to that. Well, she wasn't aware of some of the changes. And I said something, and she snarled. I'll be right back. She sat down, I got some orange juice, I breathed. Then got back to her. My first response was to just push her down the stairs. No marks. But witnesses. See, then it gets... You gotta think everything through. I'll be right back. So I've had to learn that my first response frequently is not very helpful. My second response is frequently not very helpful. But I need to know what my responses are. Blanche, again, this was on that first cassette I ever heard. Blanche said this, in Al-Anon, we learn how to keep our sails out of other people's wind. And a lot of people have wind. And I want to be able to have a little bit more independence and say yes to some things and no to some things. But it takes a long, long time. I kept on trying to change my parents. I know you've never tried to change yours. And so for a few years, I didn't even speak to them. Couldn't stand it. And I was so unhappy. And I blamed them for a lot of everything. And I find the more I blamed, the sicker I got. I was happy to do an inventory, fourth step, where I got to look at my own behavior. my own lack of judgment, my own need for adrenaline. Here's one of my other problems. I loved adrenaline. You get high with the right crisis. And you can get addicted to crises. One of my Al-Anon pals says that sometimes if the family dynamics are really crazy, drama takes the place of where the love used to be. So running to emergency, running to the police, running to this, running to that. Well, you need the energy because everything else is gone. And I was living like that. I was ordained a priest in 1978. And I was down in Los Angeles and worked in a parish for a while. I'm mostly a teacher. My community, we're more teachers than others. But there I was. And the church I worked at was in the middle of Hollywood. And it was in the middle of sheer chaos. We had lunatics and crazy people and kids running away from home and violence and immigrant and all sorts of things going on all the time. And you were on call all the time and you never knew who would be at the front door. And you could tell stories about, you know, who came to see you today. The Archangel Michael lived in the parking lot. So, many stories there. Anyway, once a week, you're number one on, it's like being a doctor, any emergency is yours, and then you have backup. But you answer the phone first, and there was, this is on Sunset and Highland, maybe, down there. There was a motel. I don't want to shock anybody here. There was a motel. And the guy who was the manager of the motel was named Buck Love. That was his name. And we had put some families up there that needed housing, and we had a kind of a so emergency and give them a place to stay for a night or two. And they also had rooms with mirrors on the ceiling. And one of the girls was stabbed by one of her clients, and it's about 2 in the morning, and not dead, but very badly hurt, and a nice Catholic girl, and Buck Love called, and I answered the phone, and she wants to see a priest, and I ran down there, and mirrors, and blood, and police, and paramedics, and went to the hospital with her, and hope she survived and prayed a little bit and did what I could do. I was high on adrenaline for the next 3 days. So you're kind of looking forward to the next phone call. Now, I could do that when I was 35. But you wear out. And one of the reasons I go to Al-Anon, did I mention exhaustion? that constant emotional upheaval, it took a long time to be weaned off that. And now I've learned to value some quiet evenings, and I mean, please don't quote me on this, but I've even been in places where, you know, it's 8 p.m., how about a book and bed? What a great idea. Lawrence Welk is over. Let's go to bed. That's what it's become, and I find it very disturbing. I find meetings helpful. My home group meeting is a tiny little group. It's a men's stag in Albany, which is one of those little towns like Burlingame, you know, in San Carlos. But it's Monday nights, and we go through the Al-Anon 12 steps and 12 traditions and 12 concepts. And last night we met, and there's about 6 or 8 or 10 of us, and a lot of us are in other programs also, so there's some long recovery in the room. And we read the 8th concept, which is pretty abstract. But the practical part of it is delegating and asking for help. Delegating and asking for help, which I need to remember to do. I don't ask for help right away. I think when I was growing up, if you had a problem, you were a problem. So my tendency when I'm in any kind of crisis, and a lot of them are really small, it's I don't want anyone to know. I want to hunker down, and I want to keep it secret, and I want to try harder. And in Al-Anon, I've learned I can make a few phone calls. I can talk to some people. Not that they will solve the problem, but I want some folks to know. I don't want to live with the secrets. And I can get very caught up in my own stuff. Meetings help. In meetings, I can frequently breathe. There's oxygen there. And they help untie the knot. And it gives me a little bit of reprieve. Here's a couple other Al-Anon truths I found real helpful. Someone told me that a lot of things were none of my business. Are you mad? A lot of things are none of my business. I was at a meeting in Dallas, Texas a few years ago. And many meetings we say the Serenity Prayer. People pray in different ways. I'm fine with all of it. And this guy talked about the Serenity Prayer. And he said, you know, in the Serenity Prayer, we talk about changing some stuff, and then there's some stuff we can't change. And he said, what are three things I cannot change? Number one, I cannot change the past. I cannot change the truth. And I cannot change you. Well, that frees up the whole day. Good heavens. What can I change? Well, now this takes willingness and desperation and grace and time, but I can change my thinking. I have to get some brand new ideas. I can change my thinking, I can change my attitudes, and I can change my behavior. Slowly over time. One of my Baptist friends told me, God may be slow, but God is never late. I hope that's true. And I have to turn lots of things over. And a lot of Al-Anon for me is I get to do the footwork and I'm not in charge of the results. I'm not in charge of the results. But I get to do the footwork. Someone said, oh, the next right thing. And I said, right thing? Oh, God. You have no idea how complicated you just made my day. I have 3 years of theology and 3 years of philosophy, and if I start figuring out the next right thing, I'm going to be paralyzed in that chair for the next hour and a half. But I can do the next thing, which is clean the cat box. Sounds right to me. Take out the trash. Okay, I can do that. I can do that. Match socks. Well, that's pretty far down on the list of things that I ever have to do. But I have done that sometimes in the past 10 years. I was real upset with a friend of mine. We've been friends when we were high school boys, and then life happened and things changed, and he made some decisions I disapproved of. I remember being very upset, really upset. And I went to a meeting and the topic was live and let live. Live. And living means making a lot of mistakes. I get to make those mistakes and so do you. Live and let live. I mentioned my folks. I want to talk just for a a moment or two about them. They're both past now. And because of Al-Anon, I was able to have some kind of relationship with them in their last years. I just thought they were troubled, you know. And I had some friends with me who were in the program, and they visited with my folks. I was there, and one of my friends, who's pretty perceptive and an Al-Anon and an alcoholic and a compulsive overeater and a psychologist. On the way back, I just said, "So what do you think of my folks? I mean, I think they're difficult." And my friend Mary said, "You make your mother very nervous." "I make her nervous. She makes me upset." Well, I think it was the first, and I was probably 40, it was the first time I got a glimmer of her reaction to some of my better ideas, because I may not have been as easy to live with as I think. So what Al-Anon tells me is I'm responsible for my behavior. And I started and act, don't react. And live and let live. And day at a time. And my mom could have used a lot of Al-Anon. She was a great worrier. I inherit, I think if I'm worrying, I'm doing something. And then I'm not. And again, I don't have the energy to waste it on worry. So I ask God for help and turn things over. And when I'm in my right mind, I'm not worrying very much. But the years pass, and finally my mom ended up over here somewhere in independent living. And I'm trying to be good, and I'm trying to be decent and a good citizen and show some respect. I never really liked her all that much. I mean, we weren't simpatico, you know? She was an accountant. I'm a free spirit. Neither one of us is wrong. But try to tell that to either one of us. You know? So there were, but I learned to be respectful and have some love for her instead of just. So it was Christmas Eve. She was in her 90s over at independent living, and I was going to come over, and one of my brothers was having Christmas dinner at his place. I was going to say Mass for my mom, Christmas Eve Mass. My mom and her little pals over there at the independent living place. A dozen elderly people. Pray a little bit. Merry Christmas, then pick my mom up and take her to my brother's and have a... this is the good brother, you know. And then drop her off, and it was going to be a nice evening. And I was... So that morning, Christmas Eve morning, I called her. Just to check in like a good person would. And I said, "I'll see you tonight. I'll be there about 5. And she said, "What are you going to be wearing?" Now, this has been a conversation for 50 years. And she's always, she was, "Don't disgrace me. Don't come looking like a hippie." And I think we spent 20 years discussing the sock situation. Sock free. I'm a sock free person, but that wasn't part of it. Anyway, you understand how wars start. Oh, anyway. "Don't embarrass me." Now, this is on the phone. Face to face, I could have handled this better. But buttons were pushed. And suddenly
talking? I was 11 years old and mad. And I just hung up.
Christmas Eve. So, and I was curious. And she ringed right back.
Don't hang up on your mother. On Christmas Eve.
I mean, this is... And I was... So when I came into Al-Anon, when I got sober, I wasn't sure how I was feeling about things for about 10 years. I'm a lot better at that. And I knew I was just furious. I knew I had to get outside. I had to make a couple phone calls. I had to go for a walk. And but I didn't pick up the phone. And I made a few phone calls, calmed down. And then she was going to get her hair done, so I called them and just left a message just saying, I'll see you tonight. And then I did drive out there and picked her up, and I just, and we'll have a good evening. If I had not been to 100,000 Al-Anon meetings, what I would have done is something like this. This is what I would have done if. Before I do any, I want to explain to you why I got so angry. Well, when I was 11, stop it! She's not going to change. I'm responsible for my behavior, and she's 93. I'm the grown-up. And so I was able to apologize. I apologize for hanging up without going into the fruit of 15 years of therapy and a lot of Al-Anon. I just said, and we had a nice evening. But my behavior is what I have to keep an eye on. And it was a good evening. I did not hold on to that. I can't go to Christmas Eve. Mom made me. Get over it.
Did you wear your socks?
I did wear socks. I'm willing. It was December. I'm willing to wear socks in December. Anyway, so Al-Anon gives me some tools to use. So I'm just not fighting every battle. What a relief. And I'm almost done, and then there's some new folks who might want to share a little bit. One of the slogans up here is, how important is it? What a good question to ask. How important is it? Must everything be fought over all the time? There's part of me that wants to do that, and that's the crazy part of me. And I'm just not willing to live like that anymore. Day at a time. I get angry. I get sad. I sometimes shoot off my big fat mouth. And one of the tools I find very helpful is the 10th step that says, when wrong, promptly admitting it. And that a lot of times I don't have to say anything. I can just keep my big fat mouth shut. I have two brothers who squabble. Religion, politics, sex. And they snipe at each other. And I'm the youngest. They snipe at each other. And at my father's funeral, which I presided at the funeral of both of my parents. I did it with great love. Thank you, Al-Anon. My brothers started sniping at each other. And I used the teacher voice. And I said to them as they were going, nye, 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 nye. I said, not here, not now. That's all I know. I'm glad to be here. If you think Al-Anon might help, if you have trouble with people, if you have trouble with yourself, if you're tired, if you're mad, I would suggest 100,000 calories. If you get to 100,000,